Okay, if you turn in your homework, I'd appreciate it before class starts. I put the next homework on. It's actually just the first four problems in chapter one, due a week from today. I kind of wanted to slow down and enjoy this material a little bit more, rather than plow into chapter two. And I thought today would be a good time to slow down and think about another problem, classic problem. So Stein has two kinds of things and exercises in his book. He has exercises at the end of each chapter, and then he has something called that he calls problems. And the problems are more, much more deep and sort of much more a main part of the material. So I noticed that the person who teaches this class regularly assigns problem one from chapter one as homework. But I kind of decided it was too involved, but it's important, but maybe too involved to make you write all that out and turn it in. So I thought what I'd do today is we'd do it as a group. That might be kind of fun. Let's see. So here's what the problem is. We're going to look at it on a rectangle. And to make the problem a little bit more tractable, I'm going to pick nice numbers here. So the x direction will go from 0 to pi, and the y direction will go from 0 to 1. So that's a rectangle. And so it's an R2. And what we want to solve is this thing called the Dirichlet problem. And this is the problem you would get if you wanted to study heat flow in a metal plate. Famous Dirichlet problem. But it has a lot to do with other mathematical things. So, but the most physical thing is it's a Dirichlet problem. You're looking for a solution to Laplace's equation, which is Laplacian U equals zero. I guess sometimes this is called the Poisson equation. That says that U is a harmonic function. You're looking for a harmonic function on this region. So I guess that Laplacian means d2u dx squared plus d2u dy squared equals zero. That's Laplacian. That says things that satisfy that equation are called harmonic functions. And you want to solve that differential equation subject to the condition that you know the temperature, so U is the temperature, and you want to know the temperature on the boundary. And then you let the heat flow until it achieves steady state. So you put like refrigerators and heaters around the edges and heat up the edges to a certain temperature prescribed, and then let the steady state temperature fill in. And that's going to solve the Laplace equation, the temperature will. To make the problem more tractable today, I'm going to take the temperature to be 0 on this side, 0 on this side, 0 on this side, and something given on this side, f of x. And let's see, where's my x? This is going to be the x direction. And this is going to be the y direction, of course. And there's the origin. So that's the mathematical problem. And I thought I would ask you to split up into groups and start doing this. And I'll write down what we do as we do it. Does that sound like fun? So let's start out with step one. Try separation of variables like Bernoulli did. So everybody get out some paper. So we're going to try to solve the differential equation up there, Laplace and u equals 0. And so we're going to look for solutions of the form u of xy equals x of x times y of y. Okay, so if you want to break into groups and talk about it, you're welcome to. In fact, I would urge you to. Maybe groups of four would be good. The differential equation is right here. So it's d2u dx squared plus d2u dy squared equals 0. So you're going to plug that thing into that equation and play around with it.
Do we have people in everybody group? There's some random people you could form a group with back there.
Anybody got a differential equation yet?
The second derivative, usually I just put the double prime over each one. Yeah, so it doesn't progress or express. Yeah.
Anybody got a differential equation to blurt out? Differential equations. Did this group get it? Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. So you got the differential equation. Okay. It looks like
people are getting it now. So you plugged it in there, and you
when you put the pile of derivatives on the x function, you'd get an x double prime. Times y, and here you get a x times y double prime, and you want that to be 0. And then when, if remember, these are functions of x, and these are functions of y. And so when you pull it apart, you get x double prime y equals minus xy double prime. And then when you want to pull all the x's to one side like we did in the string problem, we'd have x double prime over x, and the difference this time is we've got a minus y double prime over y.
So this looks like the groups also rightly realized the only way for a function of x to be equal to a function of y is for them both to be equal to a constant lambda. And the way to see that is to plug in some value of y, like y equals a half, and then you realize, aha, this function of x has to be that constant. And then now you know that, you plug in x equals pi over 2, and you see, aha, this has got to be the same constant. The function of y has to be the same constant.
And so the method of separation of variables now reduces this to ordinary differential equations. Now, if you go back and look at our initial conditions, or I'll say these are called boundary conditions,
we want a function that's 0 on this side, 0 on these sides, and the given function on the top, the temperature on the top is going to be something that's not 0.
And that's going to lead to conditions also on the functions. So let's think about that. So that step two is next to consider the boundary conditions. So we've got two ODEs now. Here they are. And we've got to mess around with some boundary conditions and figure out which ones are the most relevant. So let's think about u of x, y is x of x times y of y. Which one is going to have homogeneous boundary conditions? So think about that for the next few minutes. The one with homogeneous boundary conditions is going to be the one that we should fixate on, like we did in the vibrating string problem. And the other condition is the one we save for later.
Yeah. rates of life. Due to the excellent use works, the most promising is the first of all.
Well, so that's the zero SF4.
Okay.
But these are the corners, right? What happens with the corners?
Well, I probably should have said that f of x should be zero at the left and the right corner. Otherwise, there's going to be a jump there.
Right. Because this whole side, that makes sense.
So you're writing down equations, and you might be realizing, ouch. One of those equations is the one that's going to be nasty, namely the one involving the function f of x. I'm trying to solve differential equations, and if that one looks like it's going to be difficult, I should save it for last. The key in this problem is like the vibrating string problem. The fact that you've got zeros on the left and the right side, so there's a zero over here and there's a zero over here, and let's see, what does that mean when you start thinking about that? Would be let's see, where is that? Y is moving up and down, and x is at zero. That's the left-hand side. And so that would be x of 0 times y of y. And I want that to be 0. And I don't want to get the 0 solution, because that's not going to give me much. That I won't be able to do the top temperature with the 0 solution. So I certainly don't want this to be 0. It means I have to have x of 0 equals 0. So I don't want this to be identically 0. Just the 0 solution. So I need that to be equal to 0. And similarly, on the other side, I get this. That's why I'm calling this homogeneous, because of the zeroness of the whole thing. On the right side, that would be u at pi y. That would be x of pi times y of y. And I want that to equal 0. And so therefore I need x of pi equal to 0. And so now if you look at the x problem, it's exactly the same as that string problem. Namely, x double prime minus lambda times x equals 0. That's the ODE. Subject to boundary conditions, x of 0 equals 0, and x of pi equals 0. That's a Sturm-Liouville problem, and it's one we've solved. Remember what we did. So that's the one, that's the problem we're going to fixate on, and forget about the y problem, save it for last, and also forget about that last boundary condition with the f in it, because that's the one that's going to lead to our biggest hang-up. Okay, so that's the same as the vibrating string problem. It's called a Sturm-Liouville problem. And it's the same as the string, as the harpsichord problem one. And so what we found out when we did that is we found out the lambda equals 0 case, no solutions. We found out the lambda positive case. Well, actually, there are only the 0 solution is what we found out. So, but we don't care about that. When lambda is equal to 0, we only got the 0 solution. so that was a bust. And when lambda was positive, we only got the zero solution. Because the exponentials were it, they came out in terms of exponentials and making one side zero, then it was impossible to come back down and make the other side zero because exponentials grow. You can't make them wiggle around and come back. The key was, in the lambda less than zero case, we wrote lambda equals minus k squared. And then we were able to make them wiggle. In fact, what we figured out is that the k had to be an integer. So lambda equals minus n squared. And then we were able to get solutions xn of x equals sine nx. And I got bunches of solutions that way. And so now your problem is, so next, the next step, I don't know what step I'm up to, probably three. Now solve the y problem. And you're going to be taking lambda equal minus n squared. Okay, go ahead and start doing that. Let's see, what was the problem was we had x double prime over x equals minus y double prime over y equals lambda. And that lambda now is going to be minus n squared. Your ODE? It's a minus. Right, yeah. It's so that if it was plus, then you'd get cosine of sine.
Okay.
So this would
be imaginary.
Well, you remember the characteristic equation of second order constant coefficient linear? You're trying e to the rx. And you plug that in, and then you get a characteristic equation. It looks like maybe I need to review the second order differential equation.
Do you get the actual ODE or no?
Oh, he was
looking
at
my guys.
So let me do a quick review, and you can keep thinking about it. If you're familiar with this, this is a quick review of second order linear constant coefficient ODEs. So they look like A y double prime plus B y prime plus C y equals zero. And you ask yourself, what kind of differential, what kind of functions do I take derivatives and they kind of stay like this, stay the same? And the easiest thing to come up with, especially if you studied first order equations, is the exponential. So if you solve just the first order version of this equation, make that part go away. If you solve that, you realize, aha, those, the solutions to those things are exponential functions. So the idea for this is to try y equals e to the rx. When you plug it into that equation, you would get, let's see, the second derivative would be r squared e to the rx. And so you get a times that. The first derivative would be r e to the rx. And the function itself is e to the rx. And we want to find a solution that makes that add up to zero. And so when you stare at that, you realize, aha, I need r to be a root of this thing called the characteristic polynomial. E to the rx is never zero, so this part can't be zero. But if I want to make this add up to the zero function, I've got to have r be a root of this polynomial. So setting this equal to zero is called the characteristic polynomial. This thing is never zero. E to something is never zero. And the good thing about it looks like I'm going to get two roots to this equation, and therefore I should get two solutions. And that's what you need for a second order linear differential equation. So let's see, let's get two roots.
How do you know those are all the solutions?
Well, that's what I'm going to review that too in a second. So let's get the two roots. They come from the quadratic formula. Let's see, R1 and R2. The most straightforward case is if the R1 and R2 are real and unequal. So if you think about the quadratic formula, that's minus b over b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac over 2a. You get real unequal roots exactly when the thing inside the square root is strictly positive. Then you get two real roots. So this corresponds to the case b squared minus 4ac strictly a positive. Then, the aha here is I've got e to the r1x and e to the r2x solve the ODE. And because this is a linear thing, I can add solutions together and get more solutions. So is y equals c1 e to the r1x plus c2 e to the r2x. That's the superposition principle. Because it's linear and because the right-hand side is homogeneous zero, I can add solutions together and get more solutions, and take linear combinations of solutions to get more solutions. That's called superposition. Now the big question is that all solutions? Are these all? And that's what you took 366 to figure out. How do you know you got all possible solutions? Anybody remember the basic philosophy of how to figure out if you have all solutions? Ah, yeah, the Wronskian came up in exactly this consideration. Yeah. What was the Wronskian used to figure out?
If the solutions are like linearly the same.
Linearly independent, yeah. So you're remembering the theory very well. Yeah, so the question is, are these all? And another way to ask that question is, can we solve any and all initial conditions with these two? So I found a whole bunch of solutions. And now the question is, a second order differential equation, it's giving you the motion of a ball. That's a second order differential equation. If I throw a ball in the air, it's going to move, it's going to solve the differential equation. But to pin down the solution I need to know the initial position of the ball and the initial velocity that I throw it. And then I'll be able to figure out how it moves. And then that'll be a unique solution to that problem. So the initial conditions I need to know y at 0 is something, and y prime at 0 is something. Let's call that A and B. And so I'm asking myself, can I solve these initial conditions with the functions I just found? So let's write, we've got y is c1 e to the r1x plus c2 e to the r2x. And y prime would be c1 r1 e to the r1x plus c2 r2 e to the r2x. And so when I plug in the 0, y at 0 is c1 plus c2. And y prime at 0 is c1 r1 plus c2 r2. And I want that equal to A, and I want that equal to B. What am I saying? I said A. A and B. This is what I want. Well, that's a linear system. And it's exactly the Wronskian that comes up in that linear system, the matrix of the Wronskian. So the linear system is C1 plus C2 equals A, C1 R1 plus C2 R2 equals B. When I write it out like linear algebra, there's a matrix. See, the matrix would be 1, 1, R1, R2. How do I know, no matter what A and B is, I want to be able to solve for a C1 and C2. What's the condition I need to be able to do that? Determinant being what?
Non-zero.
Right, if the determinant were zero, maybe I couldn't solve it for some A and B. But if the determinant's non-zero, then I can solve this for no matter what A and B is, I get a C1 and C2. So to be able to solve any and all initial conditions, I need the determinant of that thing unequal to zero. And the determinant of that thing is the Wronskian. The determinant of that thing would be R2 times 1 minus R1 times 1, and that's unequal to zero. So the answer is yes. I can solve that. I can get C's that would solve any initial condition. So I can solve all initial conditions. And that shows me I have the general solution, because there's this thing called the existence and uniqueness theorem. There's a unique solution, so there exists a solution. I call that the existence and uniqueness theorem. So there exists. This is a theoretical fact you have to show, and it takes a couple weeks of math to show it. There exists a solution to that ODE. solving in that initial condition, solving y of 0 equals a and y prime of 0 equals b. So there exists a solution to that, solving it. And not only that, it's unique. And this thing shows us that we found it. If we go through this procedure and solve this initial condition, we've got it. So we've got it. The general solution. And the general solution is C1 e to the R1x plus C2 e to the R2x. Okay, so that's a review of ODEs and the theory. That's the case of real roots that are different. Then, of course, you'd also have to do the next case, which would be R1 equal R2. And they're real, of course. When you look at the quadratic formula, that happens when b squared minus 4ac is equal to 0. Then the annoying thing is you get one solution. It's a bummer. Namely, y1 equals e to the r1x. Now back when you took 366 or 262 or 266 or some ODE class, when you're desperate to find a second solution, you can mess around. And if you know one, then you can use reduction of order and find a second solution. It's a nice trick. So you're desperate. People who did this a long time ago were desperate. And they tried a y2, which is a function times y1. You plug it in and it gives you a first order differential equation in U. So you get a simple ODE. A first order ODE for you when you plug it into the second order ODE. And when you go through this procedure, it's kind of fun, it's fun to teach, you'll find in the end, you'll find a second solution, which is, turns out to be x e to the R1x. And then you can check the Wronskian of these things. That determinant was the Wronskian when x is equal to 0. And you can find out that that determinant is non-zero. The Wronskian, which is the determinant of y1 of 0, y2 of 0, y1 prime of 0, that's exactly what you need to be able to satisfy any and all initial conditions. So once again, you get the general solution in this repeated root case. The general solution is c1 e to the r1x plus c2 e to the r2x. And then the last case is the roots complex, a plus or minus bi. I've already got a's and b's, so I guess I should say alpha plus I beta complex. That's the last case to consider, and that happens when b squared minus 4ac is negative. Then you get complex roots. And the fun way to deal with this case is to realize I have a complex solution, namely e to the alpha plus I beta x. And let's see, remember, that's the complex exponential. That would be e to the a alpha x times e to the I beta x. That's e to the alpha x cosine beta x plus I e to the alpha x sine beta x. That's a complex solution, so whenever you have a complex solution, the real and imaginary parts turn out to be real solutions. So from one complex solution, you get two real solutions. So who cares how we got them? If they satisfy that Wronskian condition, if I can solve any initial condition with them, I've got a general solution. So the Wronskian, you can check the Wronskian, and it's not equal to zero. Oops, purple. So once again, I get the general, and now this is a real general solution. I get a general solution that this satisfies the differential equation, e to the alpha x cosine beta x, and I can solve any and all initial conditions. That's a quick review of second-order constant coefficient ODEs. That's all three cases. Now back to our problem we were working on. Our differential equation that we had for y was y double prime minus n squared. So it's different than the equals zero. And the characteristic polynomial for that would be r squared minus n squared equals zero. And so I get r equals plus or minus n. That's the case of real and unequal roots. So the general solution for the y problem is y, it's going to depend on n, y n of y is c1 e to the nx, ny rather, plus c2 e to the minus ny. And now I can start thinking about the last initial, the last boundary conditions. One of them is going to be homogeneous. And so if you think about it, we need, let's see, u on the bottom. Let's see, that would be u of x and y equals 0. That's the bottom side. We did left and right, and now we got the bottom side to deal with. The bottom side would be x of x times y of 0 equals 0. We don't want x of x to be identically 0 because that would give us a 0 solution, so we need this equal to 0. So that gives us an initial condition for the y, and it's just one initial condition. So it doesn't, you need two initial conditions for a second order thing. So this isn't going to kill us. So let's see, we need yn of 0 equals c1 e to the 1 is 1 plus c2 times e to the 0, which is 1. And I'm going to need that to be equal to 0. So that means I've got c2 is minus c1.
For the y case, I thought it was, let me scroll up a little bit, sorry. I thought it was y double prime plus n squared.
We had a minus at minus. It's going to be minus. When you got a minus, 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 I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now I've got my y more pinned down. The C2 is not free to be whatever it wants to be. My yn of y is c1 e to the ny minus c1 e to the minus ny. That should look kind of familiar to you. That is, so let's see, I'll pull out the c1. Then I'd get an e to the ny minus e to the minus ny. And if you're keeping your head, that's kind of like the hyperbolic sine function. We had sine when we were doing string problems, but this is the hyperbolic sine. So if I divide that by 2 and multiply by 2 here, then I get Let's call that 2C1 just a C, since I only have one now. So let's call that C. Then I see that my Y solution is equal to a constant times the hyperbolic sine of e to the ny. And now I'm starting to get excited because I've got gobs of solutions now. I got for n equal 1, 2, 3, etc. I got bunches of solutions. Un of xy is equal to a cn. My x functions turned out to be sine nx, just like the string problem. But now my y functions are hyperbolic sine functions. And if I'm going to solve this Dirichlet problem, because everything was homogeneous and this is a linear differential equation, I can take sums of these solutions and get more solutions. So the big idea, I've been saving that one nasty boundary condition for last, is to try u of xy would be a sum as n goes from 1 to infinity of cn sine nx hyperbolic hyperbolic sine of ny. And the last thing to mess with would be that last, so the last item. We want u of x when y is equal to 1 to be equal to f of x. And guess what you're going to get? when you stick in 1 here, this is just going to be a number. It's going to be numbers. And so it's going to, if you pull it into the CN, you're going to say, I need this to be the Fourier sine series for my function f of x. And so if you want to read the answer, the big gory answer, it's chapter 1, problem 1, which I was going to assign. But this was more fun, I think. So after all the exercises, Stein puts things called problems. And the neat thing is, I put the f of x on the top. I could have put other functions. I could put zeros around all the other sides and have a function on other side, like the right side. I could do it again for the bottom. I could do it again for the left side. And if I add those together, then I get a solution. This is the main problem with functions specified on all four sides. So this is just 1/4 of a solution where I had functions on all four sides. And that Dirichlet problem is a very famous one. Physically, it's finding the temperature in steady state in a plate, knowing the temperature on the boundaries. And it's an important thing for physics and science to solve problems. That problem comes up all over the place. Comes up in electrostatics, comes up in heat. It's all over the place. And it comes up in mathematical context, too. It's the first example of an elliptic partial differential equation. And we can actually solve it with these techniques we've been using. Anyway, I might say a few more words next time. But I wanted to slow down and do a couple more classic things before we start getting more mathematical. Okay. Do I have everybody's papers up here?